everyone, it's me, James. I just wanted to let you know that I'm launching this card game called Cafe Chaos on Kickstarter today. There'll be more info at the end of the video. This isn't some bit. I actually made a card game and I worked really hard on it, so please click the link in the description to get your...
My name's Joe Exotic. I exploit dangerous wild animals for profit, and that's only the least reprehensible thing I've done. In this 8-part docuseries, I'll show you the bad, the horrible, and downright disgusting aspects of what it's like to be a polyamorous, meth-addicted Tiger King. I'm the real Pokemon Master, you hear?
And just like that, by watching other garbage humans on his television, James felt ever so slightly at peace while the world crumbled around him. For the first time in months, James smiled.
I'll be real with you, being in quarantine has sucked a lot. I miss hanging out with friends, I miss going to non-essential businesses, and I miss wiping my butt with toilet paper instead of my dog. All I've had for company has been Floof and my own mind. So it's been a little hard to stay motivated during this time. But if staying home instead of going to Disneyland will save people's lives, then I guess I'll have to make that sacrifice. It's so hard to be a good person. Some of the things that have been helping me mentally has been exercise, a positive mindset, and garbage television. I used to think that garbage television was stupid and a waste of my mortal existence. But as I started watching more garbage, I realized that I've already been fascinated and enjoyed watching garbage content for years. Have you seen the videos I make? I've said this in my conspiracy video, that I love watching crazy people talk for hours. Now take those same people, give them a camera crew and a budget, and you got a brand new show on TLC. What's that? You've never heard of TLC, the learning channel? Well, TLC is full of wonderful programs and documentaries that'll teach you if you become trashy enough, you'll end up on TV. And that's what schools should be teaching. One show I've been unhealthily binging is called 90 Day Fiancé. It's about when a boy meets a girl, or a girl meets a girl, or a man meets a much younger girl online, and they sort of like each other, but they're from different countries, so when they meet each other, they have 90 days to decide if they want to get married before their visa expires. It's great that the internet exists so that these clearly desperate people in different countries even have the chance to form a relationship. And it's equally great that the internet exists so we can watch very personal moments of these strangers' lives. The show really shines with the most garbage of couples. I've seen other YouTubers talk about this one specific couple, Big Ed and Rose. I don't want to make fun of Big Ed's appearance, but let's just say he saves a lot of money on scarves. And turtle necks. He's a 54-year-old pursuing a relationship and wanting to marry a 23-year-old Filipino woman named Rose. And Ed has a daughter that's 6 years older than Rose. And he's older than Rose's father. Can you imagine for a second if your mom was 6 years younger than you? And on top of that, Ed is a huge liar. He lied about his height, he lied about wanting to have kids with her, he's also really mean to Rose. I mean, sure, he's old enough to be her father, so he's probably used to talking down to young people, and a dad telling their kids that their legs are hairy and their breath stinks is justifiable, but this is his girlfriend! At least make her a bag lunch first. Even if I thought Big Ed was the best guy in the world, do I think a relationship could work between people with a 31-year age gap?
Well, let's take a look at the math. Here is the half your age plus 7 rule graphed out. So if you're 30, then it's socially acceptable to be dating someone who's 22. Now, obviously this graph isn't set in stone, but for reference, here's Big Ed's age versus Rose's age. So when Ed was 40 and taking care of his 15-year-old daughter, Rose was 9.
So do I think an age gap of 31 can work? Well, mathematically and common sense speaking, not until Ed is 76 and Rose is 45. I think that'll take longer than 90 days, though. The second and third reason I love this show is David and Lana. I haven't seen any YouTubers talk about this couple, but they need to. Meet David, a 60-year-old guy from Vegas who's fallen head over wallet for a Ukrainian woman named Lana. He spent 7 years and $250,000 on a relationship where he hasn't even met the other person. He's tried to meet up with Lana on 3 separate occasions already, but got stood up every single time. Now he's putting all of his credit cards on the table and is willing to risk it all on a 4th trip to the Ukraine to meet his soon-to-be mail order...
Наречена.
Who doesn't speak English. Long story short, they meet after 13 episodes, David gives her a brand new iPhone X to text him on, only for him to get eternally ghosted because her nails were too long to text him back. Let me remind you that they were in contact for 7 years. That's how old Rose was when Ed was 38. Me briefly describing these two's relationship just now was so much of an emotional roller coaster that I don't even need to go back to theme parks anymore. It makes me want to puke, and I hope you can see why I love this show so much. I know that reality TV is fake, and who knows if this entire relationship was scripted and manufactured for the show, but I don't care if it's fake. This smile is real. Watching garbage television all day isn't as fun or healthy as it may seem, believe it or not. Even though I spent a good portion of this video hyping up trash TV, you should also be doing something productive. Like watching YouTube videos. To compensate for all the garbage I watch, I've been exercising more. Right when the pandemic began its exponential spike, I bought a home gym machine and I've been working out 3 times a week with my friend DJ. DJ and I met because we're both friends with Alan Becker, who makes these animations versus animator videos, and one day I noticed that DJ's muscles were a lot like one of my Japanese animes. He was a walking, breathing protagonist that my body dysmorphia had been holding me back from becoming. I reached my skinny hands out to DJ and said, "Hey, DJ, can we work out together?"
So this is where I put the iPad to talk to DJ.
Oh, hey, James.
This is where I got the treadmill, the weights, and this is my favorite piece of equipment, this rag up here so I don't bump my head when I do pull-ups. This is where I keep my air conditioner because it gets very hot in this garage. This is what it used to look like a month ago. Anyway,
the reason I started working out more seriously was because people were calling me skinny and other slanderous synonyms like slender and scrawny, and I told my friends that I was hurt by these comments, but they all unanimously agreed that it's true, I am a slim Jim. It's important to have a reason for working out. Mine is self-loathing. DJ is forcing me to push myself. We've only been going for about 3 months, or a whole 90-day fiancé, and I've already gone from struggling to lift up this much weight to struggling to lift up this much weight. Sorry if I'm flexing too much on you, I'm just proud of my progress. The point is, while trash TV is fun, remember to mix in some productive activities during the day. For example, exercise. You don't need equipment. Do 10 push-ups right now, loser. Clean up after yourself. During these hard times, keeping your space organized and tidy will be a big boost on your mental health. Wear a face mask if you need to go out. Learn how to cook. You should also be eating healthy too. Stop eating so many bagel bites. Watch parkour fails. Remind yourself how safe you are inside. These guys could get COVID and a broken tooth. Wear a face mask if you need to go out. Shave your head. Who cares anymore? Watch competitive sports fishing and get your blood pressure to rise so much that you feel pressured into working out again. And oh my god, how big is that fish? Oh my god, it's a 1,200 pound bull shark! They need 7 people to pull it on the boat and oh my god, is that Big Ed? Did you know that 99% of everything I've ever said on this channel has been written out ahead of time, including the mispronunciation of the word percent? It would be 100% scripted, but, you know, the drawing challenge videos, you can't really script that kind of content, so... Or can you? But every other video has had a script, and that includes the worst video I've ever made, my very first one.
So you know those books you make in a...
I'm gonna stop it right there because I physically cannot watch another nanosecond of my first video. I want to take it down so bad, but I'm keeping it up so you can see how much I've improved. Because like it or not, the very first thing you make of something is going to be bad. But you have to make the bad thing first so you know how to make things good. The point is, even that sad excuse of a video was scripted. And today, I want to talk about what goes on in the script writing process and how I get inspiration and some tips for writing better scripts. Because if I write something I'm not 100% happy with, then I'm stuck working on a crappy video for the next month. Like this one. People often tell me, "Oh, I want to make YouTube videos, but my life's super boring. I wish I could have an exciting life like yours." And I always respond with, "My most popular series is about me talking about working at a minimum wage small local sandwich shop. A script does not need to be an edge of your seat, high stakes level story. It needs to be an entertaining story. And I believe if told in a certain way, any story can be an entertaining story." The first piece of advice that I can give that will immediately improve your scripts is, drumroll please, in 5, 4, 3, getting to the point. Because I do animation, the longer the script I make, the longer the video will be, and the longer my team and I will have to spend working on the video, and the more depressed I'll get. So I've subconsciously gotten into the habit of writing shorter scripts that get to the point and cut out unnecessary and unfunny details. I feel like the American school system has brainwashed kids into thinking that the best way to express ideas is through the form of a 5-paragraph essay. Now, have you ever read a 5-paragraph essay that you wrote? They're boring as shit. And most schools require essays to have a minimum word count, so we are now training the next generation into purposely writing long-winded and wordy thoughts that could have been shortened down to a sentence. You've all written essays. You know all about repeating ideas you've already written, or saying the same thing over and over, or reiterating thoughts more than once, or echoing points an overabundant amount of times, or looking up words on thesaurus.com to hit that 500 minimum word count before. Well, you may not be ready to hear this, but you will not need to write 5-paragraph essays in your daily life. Shakespeare knew about this when in the 1300s he wrote, "Brevity is the soul of wit." Which is ironic, because he really liked to use a lot of unnecessary words. I once clicked on a video that was titled something like, "Top 10 Scary Things That Have Happened When Hiking" or something. And I thought, yeah, that sounds like a good video to watch at 3 in the morning. And I swear, the video started out like,
"Whether it's to have a healthier lifestyle or to see the great outdoors, hiking is a wonderful activity enjoyed by millions of people across the globe of America. But sometimes, this wonderful activity enjoyed by billions can sometimes turn deadly."
Why are you defining what a hike is? We all know! Just show me the blurry photos of Bigfoot already until I'm too scared to fall asleep! So, how do I come up with these video ideas? Well, I start by thinking, what can I rant about for hours? Something that makes me go, "Don't get me started on blank!" And then I do get started and I write those thoughts on a Google Doc. And sometimes my thoughts are jumbled and incoherent, like I've been up all night watching Bigfoot videos, but I don't care. I just need to get these thoughts out of my head and splattered onto a piece of paper. And sometimes just starting to write will make me think of new ideas and I go, "And another thing!" And I repeat that process until the script's done. And then when I'm done writing the script, it's actually not even close to being done. Once I've finished writing, I send the script off to some of my friends and the Amazing, and they look over it with the freshest of eyes, and they'll give me notes saying, "Hey, you misspelled percent here," or, "Hey, I have a joke you can add," or, "Hey, wait, James, I thought I was your friend." And then I'll choose which of their jokes is the funniest and that I'm going to steal. Here's a fun little YouTuber behind-the-scenes fact. Since 2018, there's a circle of friends I have where we all trade and read each other's scripts and make suggestions and pitch jokes. And once I'm done reading someone else's script, I get to watch their finished video a month or two or 8 months later and see if the jokes I pitched made the cut. And then I get to smile to myself because no one knows that I was the one who wrote that joke, because none of us credit each other, because none of us care. Literally, the last 30 seconds of my Suobwe Part 4 video was written by this kid named Infamous Swoosh. I wrote in my script, "Conclusion goes here." And he just wrote one for me, and I went, "Yeah, I'll use that. And not credit you." But it's okay, because we all don't credit each other equally, so it's a win-win. Everyone in the friend circle gets to look funnier than they actually are. Some days, I'll stumble onto a topic that I just know I'm going to make a video about, and then the scripts are a breeze to write. But then there are some days where I'm content with the world and I got nothing that gets me started. But I can't just not make a script that month, otherwise what would I make a video about? Random thoughts? I still gotta put bread on the table, and also my team would be out of a job. So on those days, you're basically forcing yourself to be creative on demand, which is not the easiest thing to do. But fortunately, I have a few tricks to get the creative juices flowing. It's called drugs. I'm just kidding. It's called Adderall. Wait. Okay, but for real, I do have this really complicated technique to get ideas, so write these steps down, okay? What I do is I get a pen and a notebook, put on some lo-fi, and just write. About nothing specific, just whatever my brain thinks is important. I am writing right now, with my left hand. Most people are right-handed, but I am special and am left-handed. I'm glad my teachers didn't force me to be right-handed. They were more concerned about my messy handwriting and horrible spelling. Usually the ideas don't come that quickly, but you get what I'm talking about. So many times at conventions, I'll be on a panel and people will ask for advice about starting a YouTube channel, and everyone on the panel will say, "If you want to start a YouTube channel, you just gotta do it. You know, hit the upload button a couple of times." And I feel kinda bad for people who traveled far and wide to a convention and paid for a hotel and waited in line just to hear a bunch of YouTubers say, "You just gotta do it!" And it sounds cliche, but it's true. We either say that or be more entertaining, and that's rude, so. Recently, I went on tour performing a live show called Scribble Showdown. I'll talk more about it in the next video, don't worry. And before every show, we had a Q&A panel, and the most frequent question we got asked was, "Can you read my screenplay?" and "How do you get motivation?" And the answer to that question is no, and you don't. You get disciplined. Discipline comes before motivation. If you have a project you want to start or a skill you want to learn, you can't wait around for motivation to hit. Sometimes it doesn't come. Instead, you have to set a schedule where you say, "Okay, on this day, from this time to this time, I'm going to put in the effort to achieve my goal." And if you don't know where to start, a good first step would be to just get your goals into writing. Get your thoughts out onto something physical. So grab a pen and a piece of paper and just ask your friends to read your screenplay because I'm too busy. So busy that I didn't even have time to record an end card. As some of you may know, Jaden has already made a video about the Scribble Showdown tour me, her, Domix, Ross, and Aaron went on in 2019. But we toured again, baby, last November! We were scheduled to go earlier, but then something came up. For this round of touring, we did more than double the amount of shows than last time, so that means this video will be twice as good as Jaden's. So, touring during a global pandemic was a lot of fun. Anytime we had a day off, everyone on the crew had to take a rapid test, and people coming to the shows needed a proof of vaccine to get inside, and worst of all, we weren't able to say hi to people after the show. I know a lot of people waited outside in the cold for us to come out, only to see us at a distance load ourselves into the bus in our PJs, going, "Sorry, we're not allowed, we have to stay in our bubble." Before the tour even started, we had a big problem. Domix couldn't get his Canadian visa approved to come work in the US, so he was unable to tour with us. But luckily, we found a sub for Dom, someone who loved maple syrup just as much as Dom and was willing to drop everything and tour with us for a whole month, Emily from the channel Emmerichu. And she killed it on stage. Like, straight up murder. She was super funny, artistic, and she drew these awesome pictures of all of us and just... I'm not crying, shut up! When Ross met Emily, the very first thing he said to her was, "Hello, touring's going to be so fun. Just don't sleep the wrong way on the bus, because if it crashes, you'll break your neck and die painfully. Also, you're not allowed to poop on the bus." I would know. Fortunately, no one pooped or broke their neck during the whole tour. And I still haven't pooped. Your body adapts to crazy things. During the last tour, Ross couldn't control his bowels, but this time, he couldn't control his brain. He had what he describes as intense, debilitating nightmares that felt like a Nintendo 64 rumble pack was added to the experience. And if you want to hear more about what Ross's twisted mind thought up of when he was unconscious, then go check out the video he made on his channel. But not now, because I'm talking. So, on this tour, I wanted to be better at taking photos. You know, the reason I don't have a vlogging channel is because I forget to film anything that happens on my trips. And as I was taking a photo of a venue, I found out that my phone could do something called Photosphere. Photospheres are full 360-degree photos that show you everything at every angle. Here's a picture of the venue, and here's what the ground looked like. They're the superior way of taking photos. I took a photosphere of every venue. Hey, you know what else is round and cool? That's a great question. It's the type of question we got asked in our VIP Q&A panel. Before every show, the five of us would go out and do a Q&A panel for the people who bought VIP tickets. And 93.75% of the Q&As were absolutely fine. One time, someone asked a question that was directed at their fiancé, and it was, "Will you marry me?" Oh, I'm gonna take a photosphere of this. Hold on, you'll need to stay still for like 2 minutes. I wish that question was directed at me. I would have loved to kiss someone on tour. Anyways, one of the cues we got was a little odd. I'm not gonna tell you which show this was at, but it was in Florida, because of course it was. There was one guy in the audience wearing a suit who was reaching his hand so high up that his butt was out of his chair and he was visibly shaking with excitement. So given how urgent this guy was being, Aaron called on him, but now we know not to call on those types of people. You in the suit. The guy stands up screaming, "Yes! Thank you! And he goes on a long-winded explanation saying, "Look, I'm 26 years old, I'm not getting any younger, I want to do what you do!" Okay. What's your question? My question is that I want to make a bet with all of you that in 1 year I'm going to be up on stage with you performing at Scribble Showdown! I wanted to say, "I bet $1 million because we're not holding auditions." But instead, I said, "I love your enthusiasm. That's great. But don't quantify your success into a certain time frame, because that's only going to set yourself up for failure. Especially on the internet, growing an audience takes time and luck. Nothing is ever guaranteed." And we told him good luck and started answering other cues. And then at the end of the Q&A, as we were walking off stage, the guy screamed out, "See you in a year!" And that made me upset because he didn't listen to anything I just said. To his credit, he'll definitely be remembered. Not in the way he wants to, but remembered. And he's coming on tour with us next year, so, you know, be on the lookout for that. Another fun fan interaction that happened was in the freezing state of Chicago. We arrived in Chicago a day early, so me and Emily decided to walk to The Bean. Now, I have been told that The Bean is not called The Bean, and the artist actually wants it to be called something else. So as we walked up to The Bean, I kept chanting, "It's The Bean, it's The Bean." I took some photospheres, and as we started to leave, we passed another group who were chanting, "It's The Bean, it's The Bean." And I thought, wow, those guys are annoying. But then they made eye contact with me through the bean's reflection and were like, "Oh my god, are you James?" And I said, "Who?" And then someone saw Emily and said, "Oh my god, it's Jaden!" And I started laughing, and I pointed to my Scribble Showdown jacket. "No, no, no, it's this one, not this one, this one." But I don't think they understood, because when we were taking a group photo, one of them said, "Jaden should go in front!" And I said, "Yeah, Jaden, come over here!" So, on the last tour, Aaron had just gotten into Magic the Gathering, which is a card game I've been playing longer than him. Back then, I had to explain some of the rules and show him the pro gamer strats. But during 2019 to 2021, Aaron got really into Magic. He knows the name of every single card and what it does. Like, I'll pull a card from a pack and he'll be like, "Oh, nice, Branching Evolution. That's like a worse doubling season. But you could combo it with the Colossal Dreadmaw and the Truffle Mixer. No, the Truffle Mater and get Gary out in turn 5. Gary's what the community calls the Gray Apostle." What? At one of the venues we stayed at, I noticed that there was a random 2 of diamonds glued to the ceiling. So I says to Aaron, "Hey Aaron, say a card, any card."
7 of clubs.
No, lower.
3 of clubs.
Lower.
2 of clubs.
Okay, now change the suit.
2 of diamonds.
Now, you chose that card, right?
Okay.
Look up. But then Aaron bought a deck of playing cards and performed a card trick that forced someone to pick the 2 of diamonds, and then Aaron would tell them to look up saying,
"Is that your card?"
What? And because of that, Aaron started to learn other card tricks and would try them out on people. So I don't want to take any credit for Aaron's hobbies, but I totally got him into Magic, and I got him into Magic. While we were on tour, we got invited to be a part of Jacksepticeye's #ThankMiss livestream that was raising money to build homeless shelters. And on stream, Aaron had this crazy idea that if we reached our goal, he would kiss one of us. And then we reached our goal, and then nothing notable happened. If this show sounds like a lot of fun and you want to come see all of us play drawing games live, and you live in Europe, then great news! We have a Europe tour scheduled for April. Get your tickets on the Scribble Showdown website, and next time we plan on touring in the States again, I'll let you know. But for now, thank you everyone who came to a show, unless you live in Brooklyn. Thank you all for watching, and thank you everyone on the Real Good Touring team who babysat us for a month and made this show possible. Touring with you was a blast. And now, I'm going back to sleep on my tour bus coffin, facing the correct way while repressing my urge to poop. And golly, I sure do hope I don't get any nightmares. Right, bunk buddy Ross? Ross?
I haven't slept in 11 days.
All right, James. Are you ready for this?
I was going to say, that's only happening one time.
Down! I'm crazy!
Hey, are you going to make a video about this?
Probably not. Are you?
Only if something interesting happens.
I want to tell you all the story about what happened at MrBeast's 100k YouTuber Battle Royale. This is going to be quite a long video, so some of the drawings are going to be done by other people, and I'm going to be recording this on different microphones, so sorry if I sound different. I'm not that sorry, I don't care. And I want to tell this story in its entirety. I don't want to cut anything out or split it into two videos, because the story I'm talking about is already up on Mr. Beast's channel, so what's the point of making people wait for a conclusion when you can just go and see what happened? If you've already seen Mr. Beast's video, which a lot of you probably have, then this story has already been spoiled for you, and you know how it's going to turn out, but you should still stick around, because I'm going to go into detail about the events that led up to the big fight, and sprinkle in just a healthy amount of embellishment. And if you live under a rock and don't know what I'm talking about or who this Mr. Beast character is, then pull up a chair and let me explain studios, because this is going to be quite the video. This is Mr. Beast, a 20-year-old YouTuber that, after a couple of years of making cringy Minecraft intro compilations and how much money does X YouTuber make, he started uploading some unique challenge videos, but they weren't your normal challenge videos you see on YouTube, like the Cinnamon Challenge or the
In My Feelings Challenge.
He challenged his endurance by making videos like reading the dictionary in one sitting, or counting to 200,000, road to a million. Then he started one-upping his challenges by making some big and questionable financial decisions, like buying 100 T-Rex costumes, or literally giving out tens of thousands of dollars to people. His videos got insanely popular, which meant he earned more money, which meant he could spend even bigger quantities of money on videos, and in turn get more views because of how crazy they were, and then he got more money, and the cycle just continued, making him one of the fastest growing channels on YouTube. In 2015, he celebrated his 7K subscriber milestone, and in 2019, he's got over
16
million subscribers. The dude's been blowing up. And about a year ago, I sent him a Twitter DM saying, "Where do you buy so many things in bulk?" Like, random example, sprinkles. Because I just wanted to know who his supplier was, because Walmart banned me. We ended up chatting on Discord for a bit, and he told me that the reason he makes videos is to entertain people. And with the amount of money he's giving away, and the fact that he's probably losing money on some of these videos, it's obvious that he's not making these videos for the money. And I respect that. Also in the call, he told me he was playing Fortnite, and I said that my favorite video game was Tetris, and he said, "Yeah, you seem like the kind of person that would like Tetris." What's that supposed to mean, Beast? Well, who's laughing now? Tetris is the best battle royale game out there. Tetris 99. Download it for free on the Switch today. They don't sponsor me. So that's who Mr. Beast is for the six people watching who didn't know. Fast forward to February 2019, I'm at VidCon London, me and Dave from Boyna Band were getting ready to perform Life is Fun in front of a bunch of UK blokes, and I was browsing Twitter and I saw this tweet from the Beast himself. "Attention Epic Gamers, on March 6th, I'm hosting an in-real-life YouTuber battle royale with airsoft guns. Royal." That says royal. I'm just going to use a computer voice.
"Winner gets $100,000. It will be in LA and similar to Dude Perfects' video, which BTW I really enjoyed. Reply if you're a YouTuber and want in."
The tweet was only sent 10 minutes ago. It was pretty fresh. And looking through my pocket calendar, I wasn't doing anything that day. I can make it to the event. I asked Dave, "Do you think I should do it?" I forgot what he said, but he probably said something like,
"Oh yeah, man, you'd be so great at it. When did you get so handsome? You're the best!"
So I replied to the tweet, "I can make it." Then I got added to a group chat with six other YouTubers, so I wrote, "Hello, competition." And the very next thing I saw was Mr. Beast added Logan Paul, and my mind went, Logan Paul? YouTuber's number one storytime animator Logan Paul recently came out as a flat earther Logan Paul? That Logan Paul? But then Logan Paul left because he's a coward. So in the group chat, Mr. Beast explained the rules. It would be an airsoft battle and everyone would have three balloons attached to them. And once your three balloons got popped, you were out. This match wasn't going to be a free-for-all like the Hunger Games. We were going to be on teams of three. So I was going to get paired up with two random people. I mean, I would have preferred if one of them had been a Paul boy, but no big deal. Hopefully, whoever my teammates are would know what they're doing and carry the team, because I sure as heck wouldn't. Jaden Animations was also at VidCon, and I told her, "Guess what I'm doing?"
"I saw your tweet. That's pretty epic, James. You're the best,"
she said. I said, "Jaden, the battle's going to be in teams of three. I don't know anyone else that's going. Do you want to go to war with me?" Now, this was a first for me. Never in my life have I ever had to ask someone, "Hey, do you want to fight in an airsoft battle royale against a bunch of other YouTubers for the chance to win $100,000? And Jaden said,
"Yeah, sure."
I asked Mr. Beast, "Are you still looking for more people for the YouTube Royal? My friend Jaden is interested, and I think it would be good if me and her were on a team because our channels are so similar." And he replied with,
"Yes, she got Pewds and Rewind. 100% want her in."
And I was like, "Oh, yeah, she did do that. I probably didn't have to send you her channel." So Jaden never publicly said she was going to be in the fight, but she was.
Surprise!
Mr. Beast sent us a list of people that still needed to be on a team. Since it was only me and Jaden, I gotta pick someone from the list to be the third member of our team. It made me feel like the popular kids when they gotta pick teams for kickball. First time I gotta feel that experience, actually. I noticed one name on the list. Anthony Padilla. I've been to conventions and I've seen how young some of you are, so I gotta explain who Anthony is. Just bear with me, big kids. Before some of you were born, there was this big YouTube channel called Smosh, and when I was 12, that was one of the YouTube channels that I watched. So imagine how gleeful I was when a big part of my childhood asked me to do a couple videos with him to go up on his channel. Since Anthony and I had already done two videos together, and he's done one with Jaden, and he pet my dog, I thought we were close enough to have him on the team. Also, two of the three people on our team are vegan, so we decided to name ourselves 66% Vegan. That's actually not true, I made that up. The day was fast approaching, and I'm gonna level with you. We did not have high hopes for winning. Anthony tweeted out,
"Tomorrow I'll be in Mr. Beast's 100K YouTube Battle Royale with my teammates The Odd Ones Out and Jaden Animation. Between us, we see a total of 3 hours of sunlight a week. Please, send us words of encouragement and support."
Everyone in the group chat was hyping up how good they were at shooting guns and how seriously they were gonna take this. Meanwhile, between the three of us, we had played a total of 2 Fortnite games and a lot of Tetris. We showed up to the arena, and I barely knew anyone. Keemstar was there for some reason. I don't know if Keemstar likes me, though. At first, I wasn't too worried about getting hurt, because people were going to be aiming for our balloons, not our bodies. But when I saw the gear, the balloons were just about right over our heads. So everyone was going to have to William Tell our balloons off. No big deal. None of us really need our heads anyway. No big deal. Before the main fight, there were a couple of practice rounds that were happening on a smaller field, and during the practice round, our team went into this little fort. Anthony's gun wasn't working, Jaden didn't know how to put the magazine in, and I didn't know how to aim. As soon as we left the fort, all of our balloons got obliterated.
Oh, baby, a triple! Hell yeah!
Like I said, we didn't have high hopes. Whenever I go to an event, a question I get asked a lot is, "Will you make a video about this?" And every time my answer is always, "If something interesting happens." Look, I'm sorry, kid. I'm not just gonna make a video like, "Hey guys, so I went to this school and talked to these kids about being a YouTuber, and everyone was well-behaved and super nice." Anyway, that's gonna do it for this video. Be sure to check out the video where I went to Australia and signed posters for 2 hours. So I asked Jaden, "Are you gonna make a video about this?" And she said,
"Probably not. But if you want to, you can."
And I said, "Yeah. Only if something interesting happens, though." And Jaden, I just wanna say, thank you so much for giving me this. After the practice round, our team sat at a lunch table by ourselves because we didn't have any friends. And Jaden and Anthony talked to each other about being vegan, and I ate my chicken pesto sandwich as discreetly as possible. We also talked about potential strategies, like if someone started shooting at you, then just shake your head as violently as possible so that way they can't hit your balloons. "Yeah, that'll work," we told ourselves. But deep down, we knew it wouldn't work. "I just hope we're not last," I said. "I'd be happy if we made it in the top 10. There were a total of 13 teams. I would have been happy if we were in the top 10. I didn't expect to pop anyone's balloons. Just as long as we didn't lose horrifically, I'd be happy. So, I know how these videos work. About 40 people showed up to the event. There's no way that everyone was going to have an equal amount of screen time. If you're not interesting, then you're not going to make the cut. So, realizing this, our team also wanted some screen time. I drove an hour to get here. I didn't want it to go to waste. Some people took 14-hour flights from Australia to get here, so I hope they had a fun time. Yay! The match was about to start, and our team got dark green balloons, and we saw another team that had lime green balloons. We talked to the other green team, which consisted of What's Inside, his son Lincoln, and Casper Lee. We joked with them like, "Hey, other green balloons, since no one can tell us apart, maybe we should team up. Okay, see you later." But the way the match played out was interesting. We didn't get to choose where we started. The map was split up into 13 different zones, and before the match started, someone on your team would pick a number out of a hat, and whichever number you got would be the zone you started in. That way, when the match started, the teams would be equidistant from each other. And to make it more interesting, you didn't begin the game with any weapons. Those were scattered around the field. And the closer you went into the center of the map, the better the weapons were. Supposedly. That's what they told us. So we all put on our paintball masks and GoPros. One of the Hunger Games workers walked us to our zone. We looked around and saw one gun super close, one gun at a medium distance, and one gun pretty far away.
"Okay, Jaden and I will get the close gun, you go get that medium gun, and cover me while I get the far gun."
Then an air horn blasted in the distance, and the game began. I ran to the medium distance gun, quickly snatched it, and ran back to where the group was. Jaden had her gun, but Anthony was empty-handed.
Someone already grabbed the far gun,
he said, and the team that grabbed it was the white team. And it didn't take long for them to start sending BBs our way. There wasn't a structure we could hide in, and Anthony had no way of fighting back.
Dude, I don't have a gun, so I'm like...
The white team pushed us into a corner of the map, and a chain-link fence stopped us from retreating any further. Looks like we're not going to make it in the top 10 after all, vegans. But then we saw the team to our right, and it was none other than the lime green team. With very little options, we walked up to them with our hands in the air like we just don't care, hoping that they remembered the very unofficial agreement that we had between us greenies. And fortunately, they took pity on us. They let us walk past them without shooting us, and they gave Anthony a crappy handgun. And we all agreed, okay... let's not shoot each other.
We'll remember this.
We later found a better gun for Anthony, and we also found a pretty good hiding spot that let us shoot at other teams while also keeping our precious balloons covered. Every 7 minutes, the refs would close off part of the map, making it smaller, forcing the teams to get closer to each other, just like the Hunger Games. But in the meantime, we were perfectly fine waiting in our hiding spot for the 7 minutes to go by.
Would you rather eat a whole pack of cigarettes?
Smoke grenade over there.
Eat or smoke? Eat. Ew. A whole pack of cigarettes.
Agreed.
Or sit in a dumpster overnight.
Sit in a dumpster.
No, it's full of garbage and poop.
I'd rather eat the calorie, right?
protein! Alright, I think we gotta make some headway or else we're just gonna be doing nothing.
Well, if we're not losing...
True.
And then after the 7 minutes, the map shrunk, and we and the lime green team got a little closer together, and What's Inside asked one of the refs, hey, is it okay if we team up? And the ref said, I don't know, I just work here. So cool, we teamed up. It was funny because we still didn't completely trust each other. One time we moved locations and Casper told Lincoln, you go in front and I'll be in the back, so if they try to shoot you, I can get them. Well, there go my murder plans. We shot at other players and they shot back. Lime Green team lost some balloons, but I still had all three of mine. The map kept getting smaller and smaller, and one of the staff told us that we had to be behind this line of caution tape, but when I bent down to go under the tape, my three balloons got caught and I was stuck. I think other people were shooting at me.
Shoot! My balloon's stuck!
But one of the workers saw my helpless self and decided to free me from his trap, and surprisingly, none of my balloons popped.
They're in that way. They're in there.
I think I got my balloon pop.
No, you're good.
What the frick?
Are these things made out of metal? Casper and Lincoln unfortunately weren't as lucky. All their balloons bit the dust. Our team and What's Inside moved into a bunker. Anthony had one balloon left, Jaden had two, and I still had all three of mine. I got hit in the head, back, had contusions, and fractured my neck, but that's not important. The only thing that's important is that I still had all three of my balloons. Oh, phew, it was someone else. We found out what was inside What's Inside's last balloon. It was helium and shame. He was standing in the bunker with us. Any one of our balloons could have been popped, but death picked him. Our lime green brethren were out. Look what's inside my hands. They're bullets. I want you to have them. And also, what's inside my heart is my faith in you guys. Avenge me. We had gotten shot at a bunch of times, yet somehow we were still in the game. The amount of teams that were left were getting small. Someone was shooting at us from our old hiding spot, and Anthony knew that there was an opening on the side he could use for a surprise attack. So Anthony stealthily walked out of the bunker and flanked the other team. And at that moment, I thought of how cool it was that someone I had been watching for 10 years was one of my teammates. I remember voting for what food he was going to use back in Food Battle 2009? He's one of the pioneers of YouTube. He inspired countless young creators like me to start making videos. Did you know in Jake Paul's book, You Gotta Want It, Jake actually credits Smosh for inspiring him and his brother to make videos as well? Anthony!
I got him.
Was that the person who killed all of us in the training round?
Yeah, I forgot this isn't a video game, and when you shoot someone's last balloon, they can still shoot you before they realize they're out. Man, this whole balloon system seems kind of flawed. You have to keep asking people, do I still have balloons? Because you can't see how many balloons you have yourself, and there's no way of telling if you're in or out.
Anthony, take one of my balloons.
Shut up. You have to win this for us. For Team 66% Vegan. No. Team 50% Vegan.
Only Jaden and I were left. The map was incredibly small at this point, and we were hiding behind this box and water cooler thing sticking up. Alex Ernst, who I'm a big fan of, by the way, turned the corner and I shot his last balloon. That didn't make it in the final video, so none of you would have known that.
Is that Alex?
But then, I ran out of ammo.
I'm out now. Oh, no.
Jaden didn't have any extra on her, so I couldn't do anything. We were getting shot at, and I had nothing to fight back with. I thought...
Jaden, I might have to. I might have to find a... go find a gun somewhere.
Well, if he's the last one, then if we charge him, then...
Alex tried to charge me, and he lost.
Okay, so they are poppable. I'm surprised they made it this far. But then something horrible happened. Jaden said...
I'm out.
Me too.
And with that... it was over.
Wait, what do we do?
I don't know.
How are we going to pop other people's balloons without BBs? Well, this looks like it's it, Jaden. It's over. Why are we still here? Just to suffer? Every night I can feel my leg. And my arm. Even my fingers. The body I've lost. The comrades I've lost. Won't stop hurting. It's like they're all still there. You feel it too, don't you? I'm gonna make them pay.
Oh, I got it! I got him!
You got him! You got him?
Oh! Did we? Is that it?
That's it.
Oh my God!
Did we do it?
Jaden wanted me to tell you that it sounds like she's crying here, but she wasn't crying because she doesn't cry. And then the second game happened, but that no one cares about that one. And that's how Team 66% Vegan won $100,000. Splitting it three ways, we each got $33,333.33. But then we had one penny left, so we decided to donate it to charity. Okay, but for real, I do plan on doing something with the prize money, but that is another story for another time. Because this video is getting way too long and I just want to be done with it. Actually, can you leave some suggestions about what I should do? Because I'm not entirely sure what I should do.
Welcome everyone to this brand new YouTube video. What's good? I have Jaden Animations here.
Hi.
So what we're doing in this drawing collab thing is we are drawing each other's old art. We're giving each other art that we drew as kids, and then the other person has to redraw it in their own style and make it good and whatnot.
Yeah.
Yee. On Jaden's channel, we did the exact same thing because we had such a fun time doing it. So we're doing it again.
And it's really important you watch both videos.
You won't understand this video unless you watch the other video.
Totally.
So the picture you sent me was this girl pulling the leash of like 20 dogs.
Yeah. I just had a bunch of dog stickers and I was like, I'm going to draw a picture with these. So I drew a picture around the stickers.
And there's some dog saying, you can do it, keep trying, pull harder. And then there's like a son who's like, the son's trying to help too.
So I don't know how many hints I should give you, but the dogs aren't talking.
What?
Okay, and then you sent me like these potato head things.
Yeah, this one I drew when I was a very small child. One of these people is supposed to be someone. I'll tell you who it is after you're done drawing it.
Can I guess?
Sure, guess.
Is it, I don't know, your sister?
You're never going to guess. I don't think you're going to guess in a million years. And it's funny because I know exactly who it is because that's how I would draw that person.
Because it's so accurate. I remember that brand. It was just like dogs. And their thing was having dog pictures with the dog's head being really big. They had stuffed animal dogs as Happy Meal toys at McDonald's. And I had a gray one named Fluffy.
Like from Harry Potter?
See, I don't get that reference, and you know that.
The girl's not talking, and it's like, well, who else could it be, Jaden?
I don't know.
Wait, I think I got it. Those are clouds we're pulling.
Yeah. You gave this one a lot of teeth.
That one's supposed to be a thing, too. Do you want me to give you a clue?
Sure.
It's an animal.
Is it a rabbit? Because it's got bunny ears.
No.
It's really creepy.
Those pictures were when I was very little. I want to say it was like before kindergarten.
The other one that's a person. My mind immediately went to celebrities. Is this Britney Spears?
It's a fictional person. See, even if I told you, you haven't seen that many stuff, so you might be like, I've never seen that. And I'll be like, well, there you go.
That's why you couldn't draw it. Otherwise, you would totally know because it's so accurate.
I used to have my own journal, like a journal where I'd write down like how I felt and everything.
Really?
One time my younger sister went through the journal, and so I threw it away because I didn't want anyone else to read it. And now I'm so upset because I'm like, I could have made a video on it.
Yeah. I tried to have a journal. Was because I was inspired by Diary of a Wimpy Kid.
Nice.
So it was totally a ripoff of Diary of a Wimpy Kid.
That he didn't invent journals.
So many teeth. This is horrifying. The way his, like, mouth curls up.
Oh, it's very little. I hope this doesn't turn out bad.
That's what I say with everything I do. There's not much to these characters here. And she's got spaghetti hair.
Okay, here's another clue. It's from an anime.
It's Sailor Moon, isn't it?
How'd you get that? How'd you get Sailor Moon with that?
The famous Sailor Moon spaghetti hairs. Insert the theme song right now.
Jupiter, Sailor Mercury.
Now that I know that she's Sailor Moon, I can add some details that you left out. I never watched Sailor Moon, so I don't know what she looks like.
Just like get a reference.
No, that's cheating. My interpretation of 6-year-old James's interpretation of Sailor Moon. So it's like triple telephone. What's a show that you watched but didn't enjoy?
Sword Art Online. Do you remember that meme that was like a comic of a poorly drawn guy going like, hey, do you see that guy over there? And then it shows someone waving and then it's like, he thinks such and such and then they hate him. Remember that?
Yeah.
The original version of that comic was, hey, you see that guy over there? He thinks Sword Art Online is a good anime.
So wait, is the other guy like a villain in Sailor Moon?
You think he looks like a villain?
Yes. He's brown.
I don't know, just saying like, yeah, they're evil, they're brown. That's not
oh,
so...
No, I didn't. Would you get a motorcycle?
I'd have to think about it, but then I'd probably be like, nah.
So, no?
It would be a hard no. And you know what I just realized? So I didn't watch the Powerpuff Girls because I thought it was like a girly TV show. Man, I don't know why. Like, I watched Yu-Gi-Oh! And stuff. But then I watched Sailor Moon, though, so...
I'd say it's arguably more girly.
Yeah.
I remember having, like, a little sign for doors. Girls rule, and then the other side was boys rule.
Fair enough. What about that song? Girls go to Jupiter to get more stupider. I stopped singing because I remembered there was, like, an inappropriate, a non-advertiser-friendly part. They go to Venus to get a...
Is her headband red or blue?
It's, kind of, do you want me to say? Why did you draw this?
I had stickers.
I had stickers.
You know, the best media of art.
I'm still surprised you got Sailor Moon.
I mean, give yourself some credit here. I can't believe I didn't get it sooner.
There was this other anime that I used to watch as a kid. It was called Ray Earth. One of the girls, like, she was all red, another one was blue, and another one was green.
Isn't that Powerpuff Girls?
You know, but it's anime Powerpuff Girls.
Is this a kangaroo?
Do you want me to say what it is?
Yes.
It's supposed to be a bat.
Oh, I didn't draw a bat.
There's like two dots on all the clouds, two red dots, and I think those are supposed to be eyes. Now they look evil. All right, so here is the redraw.
Look at all those. I like it a lot, actually. That's spot on. And then there's mine.
Sailor Moon.
She had no arms and legs, so she's just sitting there.
But she did have... arms and legs, the little noodle legs. No, like those two lines are supposed to be the...
Oh, see, I thought that was just like her body.
No.
Don't be silly, Jaden. Next one?
Next one. This one that you drew, there's some like bird monsters waiting for a bus. The bus is a turtle.
The file you sent me is labeled, I'm sorry, Jaden.
I think I made a video about that picture. It was a picture that was made in a book. You know those books you make in elementary school?
The answer key is in that video.
Yep.
I remember that the red guys are the good guys, and the yellow, yep, orange, and purple guys are bad.
Whenever you're drawing in front of someone, and they're like, I can only draw stick figures, and it's like, cool.
We got a comedian over here.
What are these guys waiting for a bus stop for?
I know, right? That's the main flaw in making them a bird. This gun is bigger than this guy's entire body.
Yep.
I don't know how to draw guns, so I'm just gonna use your reference image.
I was gonna say, neither did I. That picture's funny with the context of everyone in my class was talking about how they would make the world a better place.
Yeah.
You have kids talking about cleaning up the library, reading books to the homeless or whatever. And I'm like, I'd kill people.
You can thank me later.
Okay, there was this one, like, assignment for school. It was the elementary school assignment. You had to, like, write what you wanted for Christmas, but it wasn't supposed to be, like, a materialistic toy thing. It was supposed to be, like, what I want for Christmas is warm smiles with my family and a open fire and blah, blah, blah. I didn't understand it the first time, so I was like, what I want for Christmas is a Power Ranger and I want blah, blah. Then the teacher was like, no, you have to ask for things that you don't normally ask for. And I'm like, oh. And so then the second time, I asked for a clap-on, clap-off thing. Because I saw a commercial for it, and I'm like,
clap-on, clap-off.
That looks cool. And so then the teacher was like, no, you still don't understand.
I'm just going to fail you now.
Should I get an Instagram?
You've already got an Instagram. What are you talking about?
You're right.
You've got multiple Instagrams. If you could get any pet right now, what would you get?
A rat.
Do you want to go that route?
So I was thinking about making this its own video, but first I wanted the subjects of the video to like me. That sounds weird. You already know what's happening, but I bought rats. Their names are Peach and Daisy, like in mm-hmm. Mario. And Peach needs a little more getting used to.
She needs some extra attention.
You bite the peach bites back.
Peach likes to bite people. Daisy's cool, though.
This alligator, I just realized, has, like, 6 legs.
One of them might be a hand, I don't know. Or his tail.
So he has 5 legs.
I can almost be done.
Oh, no.
Like, it depends on how detailed I want the background to be.
You want it really detailed. These guys are, like, burning to a crisp, being grabbed by the sun.
So you drew the sun, like, doing stuff, and I drew the sun doing stuff, and
my son was not burning things. He was helping walk a dog.
I'm making the world a better place, okay? Getting rid of all of those horrible orange, purple, and yellow people. Okay,
yeah, freaking yellow people.
I made an Asian joke in my last video.
Did you get any comments about it?
No, actually. They were commenting that I got this one math equation wrong. That's what everyone was commenting about. Boom.
Are you done?
I could make it better.
Yeah, do that.
One of the nicest comments I think I ever got was someone said that it took them 15 minutes to watch a video because I kept pausing and looking at the pictures. And I was like, oh, everything I do is worth it. I don't want to brag, but I've gotten better at Tetris, okay? I look back at that old video of mine and I'm like, ooh, I could do better.
You could pull it up right now since you're done.
So I got into Tetris because there's this one YouTube channel back in the day called The Irate Gamer. And he made a video about Tetris and being like, oh, Tetris is so fun, it's so addicting. And I was like, really? It's that awesome? So then I just went up and I started playing and I'm like, it is fun. And then I
never stopped. For anyone wanting to get into Tetris, what's the advice?
You can't get into it. It's you know, only pros like me can like... I was playing Tetris with someone. This is probably, you're probably not going to like get the same enjoyment out of this story as I did. But I was playing Tetris and they were like, oh, I see your strategy. You're putting all the pieces to one side so then you can get a Tetris. And I'm like, strategy? That's just how you play the game.
I'm almost done coloring this gun.
Cool.
Which is something I've never said before. I remember finding my old Christmas lists while also looking for these old drawings. For like 3 years in a row, I wished for the world to have world peace.
Did you even know like all the war and stuff that was going on when you were a kid?
No, you just like say it. It's like world peace. I don't know what Iraq is.
I just need to get one more line. Right there. Hey.
Hey. I finished drawing your war.
My war? There we go. This is what I drew.
Aw. Look at him. I drew your... It's sloppy, but...
Look at the gun. The gun that shoots 3 bullets. It's beautiful.
We asked this before, but what have we learned?
That we learned how long it takes to draw things. Sweet. Thanks for watching. Be sure to check out Jaden's video on her channel. We did the same thing. Cool. Thanks for watching.
And wear your seatbelt.
This brick is alive. Not convinced? Well, what if I did this?
I'm gonna do a backflip!
That's gonna look so cool, Brickathy!
What are you boys doing?
Brickathy's gonna do a backflip, Grandma!
are you convinced now? Did the brick feel more alive? I mean, sure, it's still a brick that can't move on its own, but maybe because I put googly eyes on it and gave it a family, you can connect with this brick, and it made you feel emotions. Convincing you that something inanimate is animate is the main goal of the animate ore. They're nothing more than deranged frauds. For the last century, animators have innovated new techniques and styles to this medium, taking it from a spinning wheel that doesn't even use electricity to Spider-Verse. And today, I'm going to talk about all the processes and innovations that have brought the medium of animation to right now. But first, let's go all the way back to the beginning of film, when it was all black and white and people had to put up text whenever they talked. Early on, filmmakers discovered a very simple trick to make anything appear alive in front of a camera. And that simple trick was called... You're filming something, and then stop the camera, and then move the thing slightly, capture a new image, move the thing again, and continue to do that a tedious amount of times. On the film, that thing now magically looked like it move on its own. And with this technique, you could make literally anything appear to be moving. Anything. But some filmmakers took this art form to an extreme level and created whole characters out of clay and a posable metal wire system called an armature. Now, animators can sculpt unique characters that bend and pose in much more believable ways. With stop motion, you don't need to hire a real dinosaur or giant monkey to make a movie about a dinosaur or giant monkey. I'm sorry you didn't get the job, Phil. You know, I just had a crazy idea. What if we made our entire puppet's head interchangeable? Now they can make any facial expression and mouth shape possible. We will have to sculpt out hundreds of different heads, though, but, I mean, come on, that'll be fun. That's why we're extreme, baby! Stop-motion movies are still being made and enjoyed to this day, and while new technology does help make the overall process easier, animators are still using the same techniques that were used on King Kong back in the 1920s, where they carefully pose out a character's every movement frame by frame. In order. Stop motion is a medium that I can't even begin to understand how they do, let alone make it look good, you know? Having a stop motion character in gravity-defying poses, making hundreds of different faces, is done solely to make the character feel more alive. And sometimes, to help sell the realism, animators will mimic quirks that only happen in live-action films. I always chuckle when I see a lens flare in an animated movie, because, like, where did you come from? There's not even a camera lens. Unlike me, though, who's always got a camera rolling. Hey, how's it going? Uh-oh. Oh, no! Did you catch that? Did you see the lizard eating a bug? Ooh, we got him. Now let's rewind the clip and pause right here. This lizard moves so fast that the camera can't even capture its movements correctly, and he transmogrifies into an amorphic blob that barely even resembles a lizard. But do not fret, dear viewer. This is called motion blur, and it's absolutely natural. Fast-moving objects are hard to see in real life anyway, so this blurry blob only showing up for one frame actually helps sell the idea that this little guy is moving quickly. If you watch any movie frame by frame, you'll find motion blur everywhere, and you won't even notice. So how do animators who are taking hundreds of still photos handle this naturally occurring phenomenon with things in motion? Easy, they'll draw smear. Animators draw their own blurry blob frame to mimic fast movements. Bodies can stretch, arms can multiply, basically we can sneak in nightmares as long as it's only shown for one frame. Smears, while being very fun to draw, can look very weird and goofy on their own. But in the context of the whole shot, you barely even notice they're there. Okay, maybe now you'll notice them, but that's only because I pointed them out. And since animators are bad boys and don't play by the rules, they can make smears out of anything. Even in stop motion, we can sculpt a physical smear frame like how they did in Laika's Paranorman, which, if you haven't seen, is going to be your new favorite movie. Smear frames can be used anytime, anywhere. Unless you were an animator in the 1920s and 30s and you didn't know about them back then. In that case, you would have been animating something called... In the 1920s and 30s, animators were still figuring out some core principles of animation. turns out there's 12 of them. Smear frames were used sparingly during this time, with animators usually only drawing characters with multiple limbs to show fast movements. The stretchy, wacky, and spiritually ascending smears that you all know and love weren't really used until the 1940s. Rubber hose characters have noodly, almost hose-like limbs that bend in all sorts of anatomically defying ways. Look at Mickey Mouse's noodle arms that I can now legally show you. The reason characters look like this is because drawing noodle arms and not worrying about anatomy is easier to draw. But like, just because something has noodle arms doesn't mean it's bad, you guys. What these animators were able to accomplish with the technology, if you could even call it that, is nothing short of dark magic. And the very same studio that made Steamboat Willie wanted to push the envelope and show the world that animation could be more. It doesn't just have to be noodly characters with Pac-Man eyes. They were going to animate a realistic woman with proportional arms that don't move in weird, exaggerated ways. And oh god, her noodle arms are moving in weird, exaggerated ways. In 1934, Disney released a short called The Goddess of Spring, being their first attempt at animating a character with what was supposed to have real human anatomy. They still had a lot to learn, obviously. Now, animating a quote-unquote anatomically correct human is actually a much harder task than you might realize, and that's because of the uncanny valley. Get more and more human characteristics, we hit an interesting point right here when something looks almost like a human, but is just a little off. Our pattern recognition brains start setting off alarm bells and go, ugh, something is definitely wrong with that almost human. I am entering fight or flight right now. So if you're trying to make something look as close to a human as possible, but are just a tiny bit off, everything crumbles. The Goddess of Spring was still good practice for Disney because only 3 years later, they released the world's first fully animated feature film, Snow White. Can you really blame Disney for going 6 times over budget to make this movie? I mean, just look at how these human characters are moving. 10 years before Snow White, animated humans looked like this. So going from this to this in only 10 years? How? I can't get over how real these human characters look sometimes. Almost too real. Well, I think you're old enough to learn about the dangers of rotoscoping is the process of taking real-life footage and then manually tracing over every frame, resulting in an animation with unreal levels of realism. And I say unreal derogatorily. You're basically slapping a cartoon filter over live-action footage, but instead of simply slapping, you're spending multiple hours doing mindless and tedious drawing. Rotoscoping is not the same as filming a human actor and then later referencing that footage, like what Disney did for Sleeping Beauty or Alice in Wonderland or any movie ever, because animators use references all the time. People had figured out how to rotoscope other people long before Snow White. So of course Disney, who was trying to convey real human movement, rotoscoped some shots. The problem with rotoscoping is that we start to sneak our way back to the bottom of the uncanny valley. Animated characters often do and should break the laws of physics. They can squash and stretch into weird proportions and be drawn in unique and interesting poses. And look, Snow White is still a masterpiece of a movie. The rotoscoping is fine, you barely notice it. It's good, it's a good movie, and it made Disney a lot of money. Also, how did Walt animate these shots of things reflecting in the water in 1937? What, did they put special glass over paintings to make it look distorted or something? Who would be crazy enough to do that? If you made a whole movie entirely rotoscoped, what you end up with is Ralph Bakshi's The Lord of the Rings. Notice anything off about these characters' movements? Look at how Gandalf moved just a year ago in The Hobbit. Now, Lord of the Rings. Hobbit. Lord of the Rings. Almost every shot in this movie was rotoscoped, and the shots that weren't used live-action footage with a filter over it. I'm not saying that rotoscoping is bad. You just have to use it correctly. A character switching from traditionally animated to rotoscoped is incredibly funny, and always will be. The YouTuber Joel Havier makes very entertaining rotoscope skits that feel like a fever dream, and I mean that underogatorily. And a lot of music videos get away with rotoscoping because, admittedly, rotoscoping is a very cool visual. Now, I wish I could say the first Lord of the Rings movie was a hidden animation gem, but I don't know, it wasn't. It's not on my top 10, I'm sorry. It probably made a lot of nerds in the 70s happy, but thankfully The Lord of the Rings has been adapted into many other forms of media, like video games, Magic the Gathering cards, and anime.
Anime?
They're making a Lord of the Rings anime?
They're making a Lord of the Rings...
You thought Hollywood, California was the only place in the world making moving pictures? Japan's been making their own moving pictures too, and some of them are moving drawings. There are entire college courses on the history of anime, but you're not paying me tuition, so we're gonna have to skip over a couple things. A lot of early anime is now lost media because cinemas didn't preserve film back then, and an earthquake destroyed many studios in 1923. Some Japanese animators created shorts out of paper cutouts because buying thousands of celluloid sheets was too expensive, and they had some very unique character designs. And some Japanese animators took inspiration from Disney and made shorts that looked very similar to America's rubber hose characters. Then, by the 1940s, some major world events happened that got most of the world involved, and both American and Japanese animation studios were affected. But after all that, in 1948, one studio called Japan Animated Films, later bought out by Toei Animation, set out to be the Disney of the East, and they made cartoons about magical schoolgirls, and are still in business to this day and made some other less popular shows. One animator who quit working at Toei created his own company and made an anime based off his comic about a robot boy. Hey, I kind of like that art style of drawing humans with big expressive eyes. Let's do more of that. That same year, another studio made an anime about humans controlling giant robots. I wonder if that's going to inspire a whole new genre. And this guy was commissioned by American studios to make stop-motion Christmas movies like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Meaning Rudolph is anime.
Nani?
By the 1960s, Japanese shows started airing on televisions all across the globe, and they continued to make unique and interesting stories with amazing animations that were beloved by billions of people and grew into extremely profitable franchises. Like, I'm talking the most profitable franchise. By the 1970s, Disney was still very much the animated movie gold standard, making big-budgeted movies with family-friendly values. Which is fine to do, kids love bright colors and talking animals that only cartoons can offer, but some studios realized that animation was a medium, not a genre, and made animated movies exclusively for adults. That's part of the reason why the first Lord of the Rings movie was entirely rotoscoped. It wasn't trying to be cartoony and over the top, it was trying to be real and gritty. Animation could be anything for anyone of any age. But really, if you think about it, there hadn't been a new way of showing people moving drawings since those very early days of black and white stop motion. In stop motion, you take a picture, move a figure, take a picture, move a figure. In cell animation, you take a picture, move a cell, take a picture, move a cell. Everything's just been a series of pictures moved manually in front of a camera this whole time? Always has been.
You've got mail.
Oh. It says the entire animation and film industry is about to be flipped onto its head forever and ever. Yeah, right. I'm sure this whole computer thing is just... Ever-increasing advancements of technology, we were able to achieve increasingly advanced... achievements, like putting a guy on the moon, and drawing silly little cartoons more efficiently. Gone are the days of having to physically draw everything out on paper and underpay a team of hundreds of pretty girls to hand-paint every frame. Now we can use this fancy new computer to render everything out for us. All we have to do is create a real-life mold of our real-life human hand, then draw 350 triangles onto that hand, then manually measure out the X, Y, and Z coordinates of 800 different data points. No, come on, this is gonna be so much faster. Put that pencil down. Now we just program in a couple of keyframes and we get... Huh. We still don't have the processing power to render everything out. Oh, I know! We'll just point this long exposure camera at the computer screen. Get these art supplies out of here. This is the future. And when everything's finished rendering, we'll get this! A whole human hand moving on its own without having to draw a single frame.
This process is exactly what Utah University student Ed Catmull did in 1972. And while it might not have been more efficient than drawing everything out by hand, it showed that computers were capable of rendering out three-dimensional animations. This was made after we landed a man on the moon, by the way, so don't tell me this was CGI. As the computer's processing power grew exponentially, more and more filmmakers started seeing the benefits of using computer-generated images in movies. A decade after Catmull digitized his hand, films like Tron showcased characters racing on mind-boggling computer-generated light cycles. This might look, you know, bad by today's standards, but these graphics were something that audiences had never seen before. Plus, the movie takes place inside of a computer, so this is probably what people thought the insides of a computer looked like anyways. At the time, computers did a great job at creating rigid, geometric shapes, and animators used that to their advantage. Characters would still have to be animated traditionally on cells, but objects that weren't going to change shape, like black cauldrons, could now magically fly in circles around our characters. Disney really showed off the computer's rendering power during the climax of The Great Mouse Detective, when these two rodents fought each other inside a clock tower and all the spinning gears were generated by a computer. Animators can now make any complex shape move in a three-dimensional space without having to draw a single frame. I mean, you know, except for the characters, they still very much had to draw those. Computer graphics were here to stay as Disney integrated more of them into movies like these Cars in Oliver and Company or Eric's ship in The Little Mermaid, and then they stopped using cells entirely. Starting with The Rescuers Down Under, Disney no longer used cells and made movies entirely digitally with a program called CAPS. So if you ever wanted to own a cell of Joanna the Lizard eating an egg, that's too bad because they don't exist, which fucking sucks because Joanna was the best goddamn lizard Disney ever made. Don't touch me! TV shows and anime still use cells till about the year 2000-ish, but eventually everyone switched to digital. Now to color a frame, all you had to do was... So computers were great at making rigid, non-flexible shapes, but has anyone ever tried to make... A group of computer scientists who were working for a small indie director named George Lucas were taking this art form to an extreme level and created whole characters completely generated by a computer. Then a small entrepreneur named Steve Jobs hired those computer scientists and made his own company, Pixar. Yes, Steve Jobs was one of the founders of Pixar, and he originally created the company to sell a high-end computer powerful enough to render 3D animations, but no one bought the computer because it cost $135,000. So the team scrapped the computer selling idea and just stuck with making computer-generated cartoons, but they soon discovered a unique problem. The computer had a hard time getting textures right, and everything, including babies, ended up looking like it was made out of plastic. So the team's clever workaround this dilemma was to make a movie with the entire cast of characters actually made out of plastic. Or ants. You know, people don't know what ants are supposed to look like. It's fine. Pixar continued to develop new processes to get the computer to generate unique textures and lighting, like simulating human hair or fur, or lighting things in such a way to make everything appear underwater. No other studio was pioneering computer-generated images like Pixar was. And then in 2006, Disney bought Pixar. But I don't think Steve was too upset because 1 year later, he achieved his dream of selling a high-end computer. This time being a little more affordable. A little. Now, I want to squash any misconception that computers do all the animating. Animators still have to manually pose a character's body and facial expression off of a character's... build a complex system of nodes and bones that let them manually pose a character into any position possible. It's kind of like a digital stop-motion puppet, or an actual puppet without any of the strings. All CG characters are just their own complicated version of Pinocchio. Using character rigs is really the only way of animating things in three dimensions. But it's not like we can use rigs in 2D animation. Here in the second dimension, we don't have a fancy Z-axis. 2D animation can only be done by hand-drawing 24 new images every second. Except we don't, I lied. Even all the way back when characters were animated with paper and cells, animators wouldn't draw a whole new frame every frame. Usually, they would animate pieces of a character and paint each piece on its own cell. You remember Robin, they only drew one body and five different heads. But because cells are a physical object that get harder to handle the more you have, animators could only break a character up into two or three different pieces. But now, thanks to the computer, we can break up a character into as many pieces as we'd like four, or five, or 173! Have you ever played around with the free and revolutionary animation software Pivot Stick Figure Animator? If you're the type of person that says, "Oh, I suck at drawing. I can't even draw stick figures," then you're gonna love this program. On Pivot, you're given a pre-made stick figure or horse that have these joints that can be posed however you like. Each of these stick figure's limbs are just individual pieces that are connected in such a way that make it look like a stick figure. So to make these animations, we're not really drawing anything, we're just manually posing out a character like a digital puppeteer. I wasn't saying you can make a rig out of 173 pieces just to be funny, because that's how many pieces I'm made out of. That's right, me! Even I'm a rig! And can I tell you a secret? Most TV shows use rigs too. Of course, hand-drawn traditional animation is still used to make these shows. It's not a lost art form or anything. But rigs are super useful at making still pretty high-quality levels of animation, but at a much cheaper cost. And as we all know, TV animation has to create more animation per budget. But maybe rig animation still isn't as cost-effective as you'd like. And maybe you're not a fan of the complicated puppet look, and you want something that looks more human. Well, there's one more animation process we can try, called motion. Actor inside one of these dorky ping pong suits, a computer can pinpoint and record that actor's exact movements. Now we can take those movements, slap a cartoon character's model over it, and we get an animation that looks like shit. Motion capture is the rotoscoping of 3D animation. It cuts costs, but the results are too human, and we're back at the bottom of the uncanny valley. That's why the kids from the Polar Express look so nightmarish, because they are following the exact movements of Tom Hanks. Yes, Tom Hanks, the adult man, did some motion capture for the small, nameless hero boy from the Polar Express. There's probably a reason we haven't made a fully motion capture cartoon in over 10 years. Because it looks weird. But I mean, that didn't stop one of these movies from winning an Oscar in animation. And before you ask, no, it wasn't Monster House or Tintin. It was Mars Needs Moms. Duh. Just like rotoscoping, motion capture can be used correctly. Computer-generated characters acting side-by-side real human actors look decent. It's not that jarring that these creatures who exist in a live-action world are moving just like live-action people. And let's not forget all the VTubers who use motion capture technology to bring their jiggly assets to life. No matter what method someone uses to try and convince you that something else is alive, I think is incredibly cool, and I hope you think it's cool too. But maybe you don't think it's cool, and you don't care about animation, and you just put this video on in the background while you were cleaning. That's totally fine, I do that all the time. I just like learning about how all my favorite animated pieces of media get created, because it's not always the same process. And I think it's great that new technology is allowing anyone to express themselves in whatever way possible. A person expressing themselves. Those are the three key words here. From the big studios that are just now pioneering new and interesting styles with digital animation, to the indie studios that have access to incredible technology which allow anyone working from their bedrooms in their pajamas to create some truly masterpieces of animation. So, if you're the type of person that likes to trick people into thinking that something is alive, then you deserve all the respect in the world. In fact, here are some cool people that made the animation in this video possible. Hello, you just made it to the end of this video. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm still trying to figure out this VTuber model, so I'm over-enunciating my words. The technology behind this is beyond my comprehension. If you're still deciding what to get for the holidays, then great news. We have mystery boxes over on my website, so you can leave the deciding up to us. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm gonna go take a nap. Are you still watching? Oh yeah, she's coming back.